You're listening to Seeking Office, the Vancouver Municipal Election Podcast. On October 20th, Vancouverites from all our city's neighborhoods head to polling stations to elect 10 at-large councillors and one mayor. All our city's neighborhoods except one. West of Blanca Street, there are 15,000 permanent residents and 12,000 students who can't vote for park board, city council, or mayor. In this area, in and around the University of British Columbia, residents can only vote for school board and for one person on Metro Vancouver's regional board. That's because UBC is part of what's known as Electoral Area A, which encompasses all areas of Metro Vancouver that don't have a municipal government. In fact, the area around UBC is the most populated place in Canada without a municipal government. And not only that, residents of the UBC area have no power over land use planning in their community. To better understand this unusual situation, the News Collective's Samuel Jones spoke with CBC Vancouver's municipal affairs reporter, Justin McElroy, who recently reported on this topic. Take a listen.
My name is Justin McElroy. I'm CBC Vancouver's municipal affairs reporter.
Very good to talk to you. So you just wrote an article for the CBC on how UBC became Canada's largest community without a municipal government. Can you tell our listeners what you mean when you say that UBC doesn't have a municipal government?
Yeah, well, it's if you live in any other densely populated part of this country, when local election season happens for your province, you vote for a mayor and you vote for either one councillor or a bunch of councillors, depending whether you have a ward system or not. That is the case everywhere in Canada with a densely populated area, except for the lands west of Blanca Street. It's been that way since UBC started as a university and since there were a few hundred homes sprinkled in the area. But over the last 30 years, as UBC has grown from only a university to a place that has its own 15, 20,000 people who permanently live there, and the rest of the land around the university has developed as well, it's become a bit of a strange situation.
So could you elaborate a little bit on the history there?
Sure. So, the UBC students today would know that there's plenty of market housing that surrounds the university. People that live in homes that they own that have no real affiliation with the campus, whether it's south of 16th Avenue, north of Gage Apartments, or to the east. But it wasn't always that way, and things really only picked up in terms of that population after the mid-80s, when a university president for UBC named David Strangway decided, well, we own all this land that's not being used, that's either forests or parking, underused parking lots or whatever else, and we don't have a lot of savings in our endowment, which is the big way that a university is able to finance scholarships and capital funding and prestige graduate scholarships and the like. So what if we use that land? We allowed people to build on it, houses, but mostly apartments and condos, and people could buy their properties on 99-year leases. And they first tried this in the late 80s for Hampton Place, and it essentially proved so successful that the university kept doing it and doing it, and now to UBC there's about 12,000 people or so that aren't students that live on campus permanently. And so you've developed around that as well all these commercial, you know, companies, whether it's restaurants or other things that people use, and you have roadways that are much more used than they were 30, 40 years ago, and, you know, of course, sports arenas and the like. So you have all the hallmarks of a full, separate community, but none of the governance where people, everyone who lives there, elects their local representatives to oversee things.
So, Justin, if UBC area residents can't vote for Vancouver City Council, why are they allowed to vote for school board? and for one person on Metro Vancouver's regional board. Why this combination?
Right. Well, at the end of the day, everywhere in British Columbia is part of a regional district, and so people that live in unincorporated areas throughout British Columbia, unincorporated means that they're not part of a municipality, vote for regional area directors. Of course, in most of those places, the director only oversees, you know, 5, 10, 15,000 people that live throughout, you know, hundreds of square kilometers sprinkled throughout many, many small towns and villages. For electoral area A, it's all the UBC lands and then Barnstrom Island and a few other small pockets of land in Metro Vancouver, but it's very different in that sense. And then the other thing is regional governments are in charge of overseeing land use for the entire region and putting together regional growth strategies and transportation strategies that everyone adheres to. Well, UBC is exempt from being part of Metro Vancouver's land use processes. They deal directly with the provincial government. So when it comes to things like rapid transit or contracts with various groups or long-term population growth planning, UBC isn't at the table, and the regional politicians say that's a problem. Now, in terms of school board, it's the same thing. Everyone's part of a school board one way or the other, and the schools that are on to UBC property or close to it, they're public schools, and people who live here send their children there, and so they need representation and data. But it just adds the part and parcel of you have so many weird overlapping jurisdictions at UBC land. But ultimately, the buck doesn't stop with any mayor of UBC City.
In your recent article, you quote UBC as saying their current government partnership is effective. You also mentioned that students usually leave campus before they get politically active. Is the impression you got from your reporting that in order for UBC to join Vancouver or get its own municipal government, it will require students to demand that?
It's possible. It would need a change from the status quo. And, my reporting here is informed by the fact that I've been reporting on this for 10 years. It was a big part of my focus when I was a news editor at the UBC literally a decade ago. And what tends to happen right now is when there's a big issue where students and the general populace don't like what's happening with UBC, whether they're planning on building something that they don't like somewhere or taking away some sort of right, students will rally and the provincial government may or may not change things, but there's no sort of municipal recourse. At the end of the day, the idea of getting to vote for someone is going to be a tough sell for students, because by the time it would come into action, they would have probably left campus by that point. But it's something where if suddenly there was a demand for students to have some oversight that could help prompt the government to take more interest in this file than they do right now. But at the end of the day, you would need a specific issue that UBC was doing or a decision they were making that clearly was non-academic, because of course it's not like the provincial government's going to interfere with the academic administrative decisions UBC does to force their hand. You know, a decade ago there was a situation where the UBC farm was under threat of being developed, and the students rose up then, and the provincial government sort of threatened to look into the situation, and then UBC quickly changed their mind on being ambiguous as to whether they would protect it or not. So you would need some sort of spark like that probably in order for students to care. Otherwise, there's a reason why the status quo has existed for so long.
Thank you. So you describe electoral area A as having a mishmash of different legal authorities and groups responsible for different services, but no elected group linking everyone together, to quote you directly. So one group that stood out to me was the University Neighborhoods Association. Can you talk more about the role of this organization in particular when it comes to governing folks who live around UBC?
Sure. So the University Neighborhoods Association is basically the group that anyone that's a permanent resident on land that UBC owns is part of. So whether you're talking about Hawthorne Place, South Campus, or several of the other areas directly under UBC's control. And in those cases, people pay a services tax that the UNA administers, and UNA gives it to UBC, and then that's given to the various groups, whether it's policing or fire or maintenance or whatever else, that service all of those lands. So this is what UBC and some UNA residents and directors, to be fair, say works very well because people can get elected to the UNA board and they can push for things that happen on their lands or noise bylaws in those areas or special events and their communication about new buildings or what have you. But at the end of the day, their power is limited. It's very much sort of like a glorified strata organization or something in a planned retirement community where there's some representation, but it's not enough to actually force someone's hand if they don't like what UBC is doing.
Okay. So one last question. Greg Moore, chair of the Metro Vancouver Board of Directors and mayor of Port Coquitlam, told you it would be hard to balance UBC's desire for complete oversight with compromises that would be required if it changed its governing structure in terms of regional transportation, growth, and affordability. Do you foresee UBC gaining a municipal government of its own or more inclusion in Vancouver's municipal government in the near future? Does either one of those seem more or less likely?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, no, it actually isn't. The answer is probably no. It requires, as I've said, people, whether it's students, whether it's residents, or whether it's the provincial government, looking at the situation and saying that something needs to change. And at the end of the day, that momentum doesn't seem to be there. So while other regional politicians look at some of the issues they have around growth and transportation and everything else and say, look, it would be way better if the university endowment lands and people living at UBC were part of this conversation in a more formal way than the one person elected to the Metro Vancouver board, that's been the case for decades, and that's not going to change the equation.
Thank you for listening. This interview was conducted by Samuel Jones. Research by Samuel Jones and Alex DeBoer. Editing by Alex DeBoer. Seeking Office is brought to you by CITR's News Collective and produced by Alex DeBoer. Our theme music is by Artem Bemba. Thank you for listening.